I was on mute. Okay. I'm pretty well handling this myself today. That will be the case with perhaps more of these programs. Usually we have Michael Stacy here, but he's working on his mammoth book on the laws, of which there are more than 400, I think, listed in the Tibetans' material. So, and given the very late hours that we've been keeping because of the vigil, here I am. So let me know if for any reason you discover that that I'm not recording, which seems to be my favorite little gambit. I trust I'm in good shape right now. Just want to welcome you, those of you who... Now, we're beginning anew, so obviously it's been about a month since we've worked this way. And I want to apologize for yesterday. It was one of those things. The pressure was so great that the Identify As Being program, I found that it was necessary to postpone it until our next work together. But I'm giving this one a try, and then later today we'll do Glamour. Although we've been doing it pretty well every night, really, as part of the larger vigil meditation, but we'll be working very much on the glamour of violence, because that is what is threatened, and there's a lot of tension in Washington, D.C., and really at state capitals around the country. So we just don't know where we stand with that. And we must do everything we can to use the light therapy, I might say, the dispelling beam, the dissipating beam in the technique of light, and then the use of the colors violet and rose and indigo to try to bring into some state of balance the threatened attacks. You know, they have closed the, they will be closing the National Mall altogether. Anyway, but that, we'll deal with that when we deal with the vigil. But what I'd just like to do now is, let's see if I can, if this is correct. I want to do Great Invocation number 2, and still for a while we'll be doing that at the beginning of most every program. So we attempt to align with these great beings that are functioning through Shambhala. At least we send up our invocation. Let the Lords of Liberation issue forth. Let them bring succor to the sons of men. Let the Rider from the secret place come forth, and coming save. Come forth, O Mighty One. Let the souls of men awaken to the light, and may they stand with massed intent. Let the fiat of the Lord go forth. The end of woe has come. Come forth, O Mighty One. The hour of service of the saving force has now arrived. Let it be spread abroad, O Mighty One. Let light and love and power and death fulfill the purpose of the coming one. The will to save is here. The love to carry forth the work is widely spread abroad. The active aid of all who know the truth is also here. Come forth, O Mighty One, and blend these three. Construct a great defending wall, the rule of evil now must end. You know, when I read this, certain sections stand out to me on different days. And I'm thinking here, let the souls of men awaken to the light, and may they stand with masked intent. Well, for some human beings, this is the case, and they are awakening to the light, but the masked intent of so many millions right now is on the side of the dweller on the threshold, and that is a dangerous situation. So as we spread the light, and as people awaken to the light, perhaps it will be possible for them to stand with masked intent under the spiritual will and under the influence of the angel of the presence, and not under the influence of the dweller on the threshold. That battle has been going on for a long time now, and throughout the 20th century, and it continues into the 21st. I'd like to welcome those of you who have managed to be here, you know, after such a long hiatus, and welcome to Anna and Annette, Cindy, Karen, Martine, Miro, and Nessa, Risto, Raz, Vera, and Zenaide, and Anne Veronica. Welcome to you. And let's see if we can, we're in the foundational stages here of studying a treatise on cosmic fire. And so I'll go to the place where I can make a little bit of a segue. And here we have it. Just to segue, you know, we've done a little bit of this before, but we're talking about health, really. And he's telling us that we must be pay attention to the spine and the spleen, and that it will come to be recognized that the spine and the spleen are of the utmost importance to the physical well-being of man. Now, some practitioners do recognize this even now, and there are advanced chiropractors and naturopaths and so forth who manage to apply this good advice. And that when the spinal column is duly adjusted and aligned, this sounds very chiropractic, and when the spleen is freed from congestion and in a healthy condition, there will be little trouble in the physical body. Now think about that. I mean, because so many of us, you know, let's say he tells us that after the third initiation, there is very little trouble in the dense physical body. But even before that, it is possible for us to have a better physical condition. And this will help everything, including our service. And then the statement is made that when the physical furnace burns brightly. And when the fuel of the body, the pranic rays, note that, is adequately assimilated, the human frame will function as desired. So he simplifies things, you know, and lets us know what lies ahead in terms of a better system of health. And with the coming in of the seventh ray and its application in the medical field, I think we will see the human frame functioning as desired. The subject of the blending of these two fires, which is complete in a normal and healthy person, you know, the physical fires and the pranic fires, it's they're forms of a latent heat and radiatory heat. These are the internal fires, should engross the attention of the modern physician. And he's writing now, you know, almost 100 years ago. So the question is, to what extent has that been done? We've done a lot with drugs, let's put it like that, and who can say that they haven't done some good, I think, but not attacking the problem at the root. He will concern himself with the removal of nerve congestion or material congestion. The nerve congestion is very much related to the nadis, which are etheric, we know, so as to leave a free channel for the inner warmth. The blending, which is now a natural and usual growth in every human being, was one of the signs of attainment or of initiation in an earlier solar system. That's the, I think, the previous major solar system. And then when the Lemurian days were upon us, a recapitulation of that occurred, and initiation involved this blending of the dense physical fires and the pranic fires. Just as initiation and liberation are marked in this solar system by the blending of the fires of the body, of the mind, and of the spirit, a lot to accomplish in this solar system, no? So in an earlier cycle of attainment was marked by the blending of the latent fires of matter with the radiatory or active fires. Now, you know, we can say that that has been done, but probably in our own case, something yet remains to be desired in the successful degree of this blending. And then their union with the fires of mind, which we call solar fire particularly. In the earlier period, the effects in manifestation of the divine flame, note that term, the divine flame, because it has to do with the monad, right, were so remote and deeply hidden as to be scarcely recognizable, though dimly there. You know, in our solar system, when we have our first of the major monastic initiations, we call it the birth of the Christ in the heart. The divine flame is active, but we don't know that. The divine plane is, the divine flame is active on the plane of soul, but its activity is hidden from us. But that is the engaging of the monad in the initiatory process. And gradually, by the time the third initiation is taken, and the time equation is largely, in our hands, that divine flame will become more objective to our consciousness, and we will know that we are dealing with the monad. We're dealing with the one. And every once in a while it will come upon you, you know, that you are in all this diversity. You are dealing with the one. Naught is but me. That mantra is so powerful. So, that's in our solar system, we start to blend these lower fires with the fires of mind, both lower mind and especially the higher mind, eventually, which sets off the real series of initiations. There are, in Cosmic Fire, this book, discussions about earlier stages of initiation that precede the greater monastic initiations, and they somehow loosen the hold of selfishness upon the human being and make the human being even a little more group conscious. And they are often, I think he says, under the regime of the Maha Chohan. That same Maha Chohan, now Master R, who is so active, I think, in trying to bring unity and harmony out of contentious diversity. Diversity is fine, but if all the diverse elements are fighting with each other, a huge energy is wasted, and harmony is never achieved, and the Buddhic plane never bringing intuition is deflected. So it's contentious diversity that Master R, the Maha Chohan, is attempting to rid us of as regent of the United States and a regent of Europe through the European Union. So there's a flame so remote and deeply hidden as to be scarcely recognizable, though dimly there. And we, as we build our Antikarana, are in pursuit of the registration of that flame. It may be yet a while, and astrology will indicate if there is a possibility that that divine flame can be registered, along what zodiacal channel it will be registered, indicated by the point opposite your sun's sign in your horoscope. Its correspondence can be seen in the animal kingdom, in which instinct holds the intuition in latency and the spirit dimly overshadows. Yet all is part of a divine whole, and of that we must never lose cognizance. The subject of radiatory heat of the macrocosmic and microcosmic systems will be dealt with in detail in a later subdivision. Imagine all the planning that has to go into writing a book like this. Here we will only deal with the latent interior fire of these four entities. These are the types of entities that DK compares in order to help us gain an analogical sense of how these atoms, I think we can call them that, function in a similar way to each other. There are specific differences, and if we try to carry analogies too far, we wind up in error, you know. So, we must remember that in both the astral and mental sheaths, there exist counterparts of the centers as found in the physical body. I just want to make sure that with Zoom, you know, it's a GoToMeeting. It's easier to see whether what you think you have on the screen is really on the screen. But when it comes to Zoom, you have to keep, at least someone like myself, I have to keep checking. So there are counterparts, chakra counterparts in the astral and mental shield, sheath, counterparts of the centers as found in the physical body. And if I want to speak of counterparts, and here I think I would, no, I have to keep moving this around, sorry. Notice that there's almost an identicality with the etheric centers when compared with what we might call the astral etheric centers. Always the top four subplanes are relatively etheric in nature. However, the highest triangle is temporarily replaced by the knowledge petals, love petals, and mental sacrifice petals. They are substituted for what will be one day another triangle, just like the ones you see here. And therein, of course, lies the great gift of the solar angels, manifesting as angel of the presence on the higher mental plane, giving us a kind of substitute for something that we have not really built yet, but are in process of building. Now, I may have mentioned it before. Excuse me. Yeah, that's good. But although these vortices of fire are not shown in this map, they exist. They probably have to be cultivated. But there exist the seven or the eight, if we include the Ajna Center, also the Ajna Center, also on the first subplane, I would say, but on one of the sub-subplanes. You know, we're not just dealing with subplanes, we're dealing with sub-subplanes as well. So instead of having a 49, sevenfold division, we really have a 49-fold division on every one of these planes. So there are chakras here, and there are chakras here, and here, and even here. And when you add that all up, you get, I think, the 49 chakras or vortices of force of the Chohan of the seventh degree, the 42 vortices of force of the normal Chohan of the sixth degree, and the 35 vortices of force of the Master. He tells us that 35 vortices of force make the Master. Well, he doesn't give us, you know, I guess there's such a thing as the chart being so complicated that it would be more misleading than helpful. Yeah, and, you know, if for any reason you want to, sorry, you know, Tuya always reminds you, if you want to put your video on, but not the audio yet, you certainly can do so, or not, depending on what you want to do. So anyway, these are the four, I'm going to try to I'm going to try to make this a little bit less. Let's see if I can do that. Well, I can't. So I'll have to, what I'll have to do, excuse me for just a moment. I'll bring this over here. And that will, I think, make it clearer. So anyway, that's about the counterparts that exist. Now, you know, it all really begins on the logoic plane. And those original vortices, I suppose, involving Fohat digging holes in space, as it seems to tell us in fairly picturesque terms, starts the vortices on the higher planes, the logoic plane, and then the vortices just carry down and down and down and down. And as they do, they create chakras on the lower planes. Now, here he puts this into italics, which I suppose means it's important. There exists in the sun, in the planet, in man, and in the atom. And, you know, by the way, there are other atoms we could consider. The atom of the planetary chain, the atom of the planetary globe, for instance. But he's just rounding it off and simplifying. There exists in the sun, in the planet, in man, and in the atom, a central point of heat. Or, if I might use so limiting and inappropriate a term, and notice the word, this is interesting, a central cavern. We know caverns are hollow, right? A central cavern of fire, or nucleus of heat. And this central nucleus reaches the bounds of the sphere of influence. Its ring pass not by means of a threefold channel. And this is going to get us into the hollow earth theory, which some of the writings purported to be of Master Hilarion discuss. There is a certain chamber, a certain cavern, and we have thought that the very center of the earth's core is some kind of molten iron or whatever. But it seems that from the more esoteric point of view, we have a hollowing out in which a sustaining fire is burning. Now, let's see, what does it say here? From T. Suba Roe, on some thoughts on the Gita, you know, he was in a way the equal of Blavatsky. And they were both, you know, considered initiates of the fourth degree, I do believe. The divine essence that pervading the entire universe of millions of solar systems, I guess we could have even said galaxies, if it had been written at a later time, is caught up by our sun, that divine essence, and passed out in a manifested form to the utmost boundaries of our solar system, so that this manifested essence may be the basic soil of the growth, preservation, and destruction of our worlds. That divine essence is simple nadam of our yogic philosophy, and that nadam or om subsequently manifests itself as seven streams. The unmanifested is manifested by or born by the subsequent ramifications. It's almost as if we are all examples of the word. We are manifestations of the word, he seems to be saying. These streams are the seven vowels or seven notes. So he's connecting the science of mantrams and of spiritual numerals with the seven streams which lead to the manifested solar system. Seven vowels or seven notes, and as we go along, we'll learn more about what they are. Already, Blavatsky has given us a number of these. Planets, colors, symbols, geometrical symbols that all correlate with each other and are called spiritual numerals. So it might not be a bad idea, you know, to memorize what they are. You know, for instance, I can tell you that the red of the first note C is considered Martian in one respect, maybe having to do something more with the first ray in another. The orange of the second note, D, is considered solar or Vulcanian. The yellow of the third note, E, is considered Mercurian and related to the Buddhic plane. The green of the fourth note, Fa, Do, Re, Mi, Fa, is considered Saturnian and related to the third ray and to the planet Saturn. The blue of the note G, and it is not yet the indigo blue, it is Do, Re, Mi, Fa, Sol. It's the soul note in a way, and it can be considered as related to Jupiter. And then we come to an interesting point, the note A, Do, Re, Mi, Fa, Sol, La, La. And that is the indigo note, but it is indigo in a great synthetic sense, but also esoterically, on the fifth ray, it is indigo as well. An esoteric color of the fifth ray is indigo, and perhaps with the fifth ray's insistence on exactitude of frequency, maybe that's why the orchestras tune themselves on that note. The next note, Do, Re, Mi, Fa, Sol, La, T, or C, Do, Re, Mi, Fa, Sol, La, T is violet note. It's the note B. And it's also called the leading tone. And it takes us, as it leads, into another octave of the red. So Blavatsky has actually given us this kind of division in her esoteric writings. And if we can memorize those a few correlated thoughts which bring together the color and the note and the ray and the planet, we will be have a very firm basis for some speculations about how, you know, things are put together, ourselves and the solar system and the planet and so forth. Anyway, arising, all this arising out of the word. The AUM, by the way, is correlated with the green note, Fa. The OM is correlated with the blue note, soul. And there are maybe other correlations we could make when we consider the note ah or a, then au, very similar to om, and aum. There's a wonderful section there where he breaks down or looks at the combinations of everything that arises from the letter A, which is the alpha, the foundational letter. Okay. So these streams are seven vowels or seven notes. And then, of course, we get into the Kabbalah where the vowels are not given to those who know, because you can have the same consonants in different vowels, and it's a different word. These seven vowels and notes must have special correlations with the seven Vedic meters. Now, when it comes to the meters, we in English are familiar with three or four, you know, the pa-pum, 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 pa-pum. That is the iambic meter. Bum, pa-pum, pa-pum, pa-pum. I think that's called trochaic. And they're, you know, I think anapestic and dactylic, something of that nature. But you have short, short, long, ta-ta-tum, ta-ta-tum, and long, ta-ta-tum, long, short, short, long, short, short. So these are what's left of our knowledge of the meters. And T. Subba Roe says there are seven. Now, you've sometimes seen some of these Indian drummers. I'm speaking of those who are part of the Vedic tradition in India. And they have incredibly complex ragas and rhythms. It's all such a deep, deep study, and I'm sure it comes from the Vedic lore, and I'm sure that it has different effects depending upon the meters that we're using. And of course, it's not confined to India. In Africa, I think they have the same, and maybe among, you know, different ancient cultures. So rhythm through meter is very important in creating manifestation. The seven vowels and notes must have special correlations. He's not getting into it with the seven Vedic meters. So that's another thing we could correlate: the notes, the planets, the meters. You will find that by your effort to come up with correct correlations, you will enter a realm of spiritual numerals, which will reveal all kinds of relationships which may not have been suspected. And you'll be able to work with the factor, increasingly, of pure reason, which leads to the straight knowledge of the intuition of the Buddhic plane, knowing in a purely reasonable way. And that's not through reasoning, that's another matter, how things are connected. And in the kind of occultism that Master DK offers, it's the connections that he brings to us in the great science of relations, these connections being unsuspected and revelatory when we finally really get into them. So, seven Vedic meters, since in the Vishnu Purana, Parasara describes the Vedic meters as the coursers. Coursers are horses, right? Of the solar essence. So we're riding along the seven rays here, really. And he has a humble title here, you know, Some Thoughts on the Gita. Obviously, it's much expanded from the usual Bhagavad Gita. He's taken it further. So we discover that in a little footnote here, it's not so little, there's a lot of hints concerning foundational matters which we should take into consideration if we want to approach our knowledge with what the Tibetan can offer, which is called meticulous entirety. Okay, so that was that footnote number 17. There exists in the sun, in the planet, in man, and in the atom, a central point of heat, if I might use so limiting and inappropriate a term, a central cavern of fire, or nucleus of heat, and this central nucleus reaches the bounds of its sphere of influence, its ring pass knot, by means of a threefold channel. And in the Leadbeater drawings between chakras, we generally see three channels connecting them. So now we're looking at the sun, and we can look at the planet and at man, and probably at the atom of substance. Yes, the atom of substance. And that will take us up to fire, elementals, and devas. We won't make it that far this time, but we will continue. So taking a look at the sun anyway, we have the sun. Within the sun, right at its very heart, is a sea of fire or heat, but not of flame. I guess flame is considered at this point a more gross manifestation, I suppose. Sometimes it seems to represent something very high, and other times more objective. Herein may lie a distinction that perhaps will convey no meaning to some. Well, maybe that's we. It is the center of the sphere and the point of fiercest internal burning, but has little to do with little relation to the flames. See how he's looking at flame, or burning gases, whatever term you care to use, that are generally understood to exist whenever the sun is considered. There has been at first a material assessment of the structure or constituents of the sun, but then more lately some kind of plasmic state of matter which borders on etheric has been proposed. So maybe at the time that this book was written, the burning gases idea was prominent, but it's become much more sophisticated. Now, I'm not on the fifth ray, and I don't get into that, you know, in any thorough manner, but at least we know there has been an evolution of the ideas around the constituents of the sun. The central heat radiates its warmth to all parts of the system by means of a triple channel, or through its rays of approach, you know, from this point of central heat, from that cavern, there are rays of approach to the planets, planetoids, asteroids, whatever beings found there in manifestation in our solar system. So the rays of approach, which in their totality express to us the idea of the heat of the sun. Now, we are so balanced at this point in our distance from the sun here on Earth that we can support the kind of life that we think is life. But on other planets, the life support system is different. On Mars, something closer to what we have is possible. But as we go farther out, the forms of the humanity and whatever types of lives exist are different necessarily to what we have on Earth, because those forms could not survive on those planets. But within our planetary scheme, they can. So what is this triple channel? He calls it by three names. The Akasha, itself vitalized matter or substance, animated by latent heat. Now, you know, sometimes when we speak of the Akasha, we speak particularly of the monadic plane and the type of matter, energy found there is called Akasha. But maybe he doesn't mean that here. Maybe he means something more general. Then there is electricity, substance of one polarity, and energized by one of the three logoic aspects. And there are three types of electricity. We are familiar with the positive pole, the negative pole, and he says we are less familiar with what is called the neutral pole, or not a pole really, neutral electricity. To express it more occultly, substance showing forth the quality of the cosmic Lord, whose energy it is. So there's a triple kind of division in electrical phenomena, and we're really understanding only the ABCs of the electrical universe. Now there, you know, is that a gentleman working with the Lucis Trust in London who has a very powerful fifth ray, and I think he's written a book called The Electric Universe or something. This is his province, and he's in a position to explain it to us much better than I could. And then there are the light rays of pranic aspect, some of which are now being recognized by the modern scientists. Maybe we call them cosmic rays. They are but aspects of the latent heat of the sun as it approaches the Earth by a particular line of least resistance. Well, these are great generalities that he is offering us here. And what I've found is that when we begin to compare this triple channel to the triple channel found in other atoms, like the planet, man, and like the atom of substance, you know, when we're looking at Babbitt's atom, we see also that triple channel. So the certain numerical structures remain from atom to atom, or from the great atom of the solar system to the tiny atom of substance, and even lesser parts than that in the subatomic particles, which are not taken up here yet. So I find that it's possible to learn something that may have been a little bit obscure when we compare things, we compare the three as found in each of the four types of atoms that he has given to us. But of course, still there are going to be a lot of blank spaces. So from vitalized matter animated by latent heat, to electricity, and to light rays of pranic aspect. And the question is, in what direction are they heading? Are we ascending here in subtlety or descending? Maybe we can find that out. When the term channel of ray approach is used, it means approach from the center of solar radiance to the periphery. I think that's an important point. Channel of ray approach from the center to the periphery. And, you know, we find this to be the case in our own individual structure, that we are warmed by this central furnace. Our whole bodily frame is warmed, and other types of rays also approach. What is encountered during that approach, such as planetary bodies, for instance, will be affected by the Akashic current, the electrical current, and the pranic current in some way. But all of these currents are only the internal fires of the system when viewed from some other point in universal, though not solar, space. You have to admit that he's really getting into things that require the fifth ray to unfold. I'm going to, let's see if I can, I'll just use different contrasting colors so they stand out, not that the color is absolutely appropriate. What is encountered during that approach, the channel of ray approach, from the sun, from that central cavern, such as planetary bodies, for instance, will be affected by three influences. The Akashic current, the electrical current, and the pranic current in some way. Now, to try to distinguish the electrical current from the pranic current, I think would be difficult at this point. But all of these currents are only the internal fires of the system when viewed from some other point in universal, though not solar, space. In other words, from outside the solar system altogether, these three currents are seen as internal fires. So he says now the obvious to us, and something we've probably been thinking. It is therefore obvious that this matter of fire is as complex as that of the rays. You know, the 49 fires of Brahma, the 49 rays and sub-rays, the 49 spirits of darkness, they all have their complexity and their analogies. It is as complex as that of the rays. The internal fires of the solar system become external and radiatory when considered from the standpoint of a planet, while the internal fires of the planet will affect the human being as radiation in exactly the same way as the pranic emanations of the etheric body affect another physical body as radiatory. The point to be grasped in all these aspects is that one and all have to do with matter or substance and not with mind or spirit. So what I'm going to do, you know, try to divide this up a little bit so that we can distinguish. Now, I know you might think you're in some kind of science class. And, you know, maybe when you were in high school or college, or those particular subjects were not your favorite. But DK does begin, even though he's not a fifth ray master, he does begin with a number of fifth-rate points, which he considers to be foundational. So anyway, one more time, it is therefore obvious that this matter of fire, the subject of fire, is as complex as that of the rays. The rays are pursued more on the general second aspect line. These fires of matter are pursued on the third aspect line. And we're not yet in a position to pursue what he vaguely refers to as the spirits of darkness and their subdivisions, which would be pursued more in the next solar system when the will aspect is predominant. So what is internal becomes external. That's what he's trying to tell us. The internal fires of the solar system become external and radiatory when considered from the standpoint of the planet. In other words, what we starts as an internal fire is received by us as an external or radiatory fire here on this planet and on other planets, whilst, and now he carries the analogy on, whilst the internal fires of the planet will affect a human being or other beings as radiatory, as radiation, in exactly the same way as the pranic emanations of his etheric body will affect yet another physical body as radiatory. So what begins as internal ends up being radiatory when a lesser atom receives it. And, you know, I'm glad he summarizes here the point to be grasped in all these aspects, is that one and all have to do with matter and substance, because that's what he's dealing with, not with mind, a different section of the book, or with spirit. We are dealing with matter, you know, and with matter energy. Really, matter is energy. So we're dealing with the foundation. And the third ray is, we know, the builder of the foundation. Okay, well, that gives us a little bit of a foundation to pursue later. You know, I'm sure we're all overloaded, and I know I am. What goes on in the planet and what goes on in the man. And obviously, these are ascending. I wondered whether they were ascending or descending, but Akashic is the first and most dense. Then comes the electrical response. And finally comes the pranic emanation. So that's what I meant. When you turn to the human being, it gives you a hint as to what's going on relative to productive substance, electrical fluid, and the emanation of the planet, planetary prana. It gives you a hint as to what's going on here with the Akasha, the most dense, we shall say, electricity in the middle position, and the highest being the pranic rays of light. And that is helpful, keeping our ascending or descending sequences in the right order. Okay, friends, well, that has to be enough for right now. And I know that many of you will long to get into the section of the book where we're dealing with the soul, at least with the personality. And but we have a little bit of time to go, and we'll be dealing here with different types of lower lives and so forth on the different planes. It's fascinating material, even if we aren't really along the scientific line. We have the opportunity to make sure that we have a factual basis for our normally vaguer, more vague speculations about the soul. One day, when France, perhaps it will be France, he seems to hint it, it will discover the true nature of the soul in a scientific manner, these kinds of foundational statements about the third aspect of divinity will be important. Now, we all are also adding, you know, as we go along here, some work on the climate. And that's a crisis. Some work on our relationship to the animal kingdom. And that is a responsibility. And we're going to add a section on group work. So the variety of things offered will increase. And, you know, you can attend when you can attend. Or you can pick it up later when it's put on Makara. And I will just repeat that on Makara is, well, what can I say? I don't want to get rid of this. On Makara, we will find my earlier compilations and commentaries. And they are very detailed, as you can see here. And they may give a deeper insight than will be possible in simply a kind of a verbal approach. So we've gone this far, but there's much more in-depth material on Makara, but I find that it, you know, you just can't read a commentary. You have to, I mean, you can't verbalize it. You have to read it and get into the more exactitude of thought. So we've gone this far, and let's see. No, that's not the one. Just excuse me for a second here. I want to increase the size of this, and I want to say that we'll begin here when we begin. Now, Tuya and Anne have been making up the schedule, and I fit myself into it the best way I can, and it's getting a little more complex. So this is the end of A Treatise on Cosmic Fire reading in depth, and the day today is the 15th of January 21. And I'm not even sure what page we're on. Usually I have Michael to help me out here. But I think we're on page... excuse me. 50, yeah, page 60. That's where we are. Okay. So... sorry for this slight delay here, but okay, page 60. And we will begin this on Cosmic Fire in depth. And I'm not exactly sure on what day. But it's on our list, and again, page 60. With the planet, we'll be working with the parallels of this triple stream that we recognize in ourselves as how do we recognize it in ourselves? We recognize it in ourselves as bodily warmth, nervous response, and pranic emanation. Then we generalize to these larger atoms and to the smaller atom as well, having that anchor of knowing something at least about the human being. All right. So now, let's see if I can handle this. We have the chat. And Roz is saying that this is interesting, always interesting and helpful. You know, I just want to say, Roz, and to everybody, that man, the human kingdom, is Manas. We are right now. And it's very probable that our personality ray as a human race right now is the fifth ray with a fourth ray soul. I have gathered from the Tibetan that it will not always be the case, and that the day is coming when humanity as a whole will have a fourth ray personality and a second ray soul. Now, this is very interesting because we are told that occultism is moving to the West from the East. That doesn't mean that, you know, those Himalayan fastnesses will cease to exist. They do exist as the masters' retreats and the place where they centralize their power. But the rays of the Occident are the second ray soul and fourth ray personality, exactly the same rays as will characterize humanity eventually, the two and the four. You know, and in these days of turbulence, when we're making a transition from the age of Pisces into the age of Aquarius, and people are so disoriented, or they're oriented fanatically and rigidly along a sixth ray line, we really need the introduction of the harmony aspect of the fourth ray, and more of the great, beautiful, synthetic indigo blue, which will take the many frictional elements and unite them. We need to be, you know, a united humanity. And we are entering a period for some 2,000 years, and maybe longer in another sense, which we call the age of universal love, or the age of universality. And that is going to be so important in welding human difference together. There will be unity in diversity, diversity in unity. It's an Aquarian theme. I wish I could play the song for it right now, but you know, one day I'll learn how to do that. And that unity and diversity need not be, it will not be contentious. It will not be frictional, or if it's somewhat frictional, it'll be frictional in a helpful way. Each different perspective sort of prodding the other to a deeper and better understanding. So this is what we're entering. And it's going to require a very deep understanding of matter in a spiritualized sense. It's not that we abandon the study of matter. We just recognize it as energy, matter force, matter energy, and we apply it in a way that will actually help the elevation of humanity, you know, the law of elevation, the law of group progress under Capricorn. We do that. And, excuse me, one of my cats ate my mouse. Well, in other words, what I mean to say is every mouse that is not automatic has a cord. And for some reason, I have cats that love to chew on mouse cords. So occasionally the mouse just ceases to function. Anyway, so that's the story about our studies right now, preparing for this age of, well, can we call it unity and diversity, spiritual materialism? In other words, matter will be used correctly rather than just shunned, set to the side, considered to be evil, considered to be non-spiritual, non-religious. You know, matter will be looked at in an entirely different way under the incoming seventh ray. Okay. Now, I'm going to look for you here. If there's anybody that I'm, first of all, I'm looking for statements. And Anne Veronica is saying that charts can become three-dimensional. And actually, Dane Rudyard talked a lot about birth spheres. And I suppose when you look at what's possible, I forget the term. Anyway, you can have these sort of free-standing images in space. I think that's the direction that charts are going in, and they'll be very, very, very useful in determining deeper astrological revelations. Okay, now if anybody would like to speak, you can raise your hand and just unmute yourself. I'm alone here, you know what I mean, so I maybe can't cover everything, but if there's anybody that would like to say anything at this point, you're certainly welcome to do so. I'm kind of trying to keep my eye on any microphone that becomes unmuted. You know, when I read this first chapter in Cosmic Fire, or this first section, I sometimes just wonder, I'm a bit awestruck. I wonder if there's anything to say. The Tibetan is presenting us with something, well, where else is it presented? You know, he's gone so deeply into the foundations of matter for which the scientist is now searching. I'm sure that if a scientific reader were to get a hold of this, it would just be filled with hints that people like you and I cannot fathom, because we're not trained in those subtle, or what is becoming more and more subtle, scientists. Science says, he tells us the true occultist is found on the fifth ray. Well, I mean, there are many ways to be the true occultist, but there's a tendency for fifth ray types to be the true occultist. If they go deeply enough, those people that are working with the CERN, is that what it's called? You know, the maybe it's a crude way continuing in terms of what will be, but they are atom smashers, and they reveal etheric particles, and they're really at the forefront of discovering what the etheric plane and the etheric subplanes are. They are occultists, and some of us are much more, I guess you could say, mystically trained along the line of the heart. But along comes DK, and he's trained that way, along the line of the heart, but he has this incredible mentality which will allow us to make a bridge towards some of the occultism which is offered by the fifth ray. Okay, well, if there is nobody that wishes to speak or to write anything in the chat box, we are then maybe mercifully at the end of this particular reading section and discussion. And what we can do together, there'll be more programs today. The Glamour program at 6 p.m. GMT, and then Friday. The vigil going on at 8 p.m. And of course, we must keep that vigil going. The beast is out of the bottle, we might say, and the Martian destruction, when untempered by the regulation of Saturn, is very destructive. There is a being. I can show you a kind of a picture of what that being, how it's charted, and you've seen it before, but it's on page 99 of Esoteric Psychology 2, and basically, put this over here. Oh, there it is. Oh my goodness, it was right there, and I went away from it. Yeah. There is a great being, and that's the correct one, that is represented by this interlocking circles on the chart of solar and planetary hierarchies. And, we want to thank Keith Bailey here for having, long ago given us the coloration and the lines there, which are ever so much more evocative than just looking at black and white. Okay. So anyway, here is the being I'm talking about. It's a great third ray being. And it expresses through three planets, one of which is our own. And it's all under the law of sacrifice, because through the three planets that through which this being, a sub-being of the solar logos, is expressing, it's kind of an analogy to the Holy Spirit being, sacrifice and pain is felt as in no other place on the solar system. So the three planetary logoi through which this super being expresses are Saturn, Mars, and Earth, with Earth representing the dense physical, personal aspect more, Mars the astral body, and Saturn the mental body. Now, Mars is out of control and is a non-sacred expression, whereas Saturn is sacred. Earth is semi-sacred and Mars is non-sacred, even though Earth is called a non-sacred planet. But it is, the Tibetan tells us, sacred interiorly. Now, if we don't get the law of the mental body of Saturn, of this being, regulating the rampant Mars, we have problems. And those are the very problems that are showing up now in the United States and in more largely in the ongoing decades-long battle between the dweller on the threshold and the angel of the presence of humanity. So it's all happening within the realm of the third aspect. We're not even really in the realm of the next aspect, which is the blue circle, which is a combination of Uranus, Jupiter, and Venus. So it's very interesting to think that there are these sort of sub-cosmic beings that embrace entire planetary schemes as their personality vehicles. Something to keep in mind. So we will, look at Babbitt's Atom. Well, maybe I didn't do that. It just popped up, but there are your three that we've been talking about. The three connectors, the three streams, which have different names for the different atoms, but there are always three. There they are. All right. I'm going to close with the great invocation, number three, the final great invocation. Let's see if I have... I think I can do it this way. Try this way. Yeah. All right. You should now see the great invocation. I always put it up because, you know, even though we've said it thousands of times, you can forget where you are. I've often done that. Okay, great invocation, friends. From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into the minds of men. Let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into the hearts of men. May Christ return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide the little wills of men, the purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center which we call the race of men, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth. Thank you, everybody, and Glamour tonight, Glamour of Violence, and then the Vigil. Lots of love, many blessings. Thank you for being here with us. And this will be on Makara. Our colleague BL is very good at getting these things up quite expeditiously. So if you want to review anything, you can. And if you want to recommend this to anybody, you can do that too. We'll see you soon. Bye-bye.